Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations. My name is Katherine Halpin, and it's my extreme pleasure to host this Blog Talk Radio show. Coach Conversations is sponsored by the International Coach Federation Phoenix Chapter. It's produced by Anna Malikian, Ph.D., ACC, and a Book Yourself Solid Elite Certified Coach. And it's hosted by me, Katherine Halpin, MCC. The purpose of our show is to promote the profession of coaching and to promote membership in the International Coach Federation. You can visit our show page at blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix. There you can find links to our websites. If you're listening to the show live and have a computer nearby, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. You'll find a post on this show that we're going to use as our virtual chat room. So if you have comments, questions, or insights, you can write them there. Even if you're listening to the recording later and want to go on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ICF Phoenix, we would love to hear from you. It's very important, if you're a coach, that you get our free continuing CCEUs. They're approved by ICF for your CEUs that you need to retain your coach certification, and we have 30 months of previous shows that all qualify for the CCEU credits with the ICF. These particular credits can be used for individual credentialing renewals. And if you visit our ICFPhoenix.com webpage, you'll find out the details. All you have to do is listen to the show, either live or as a download, and then write a little synopsis about what you learned. And then, of course, retain that synopsis as part of your documentation for your renewal package. And today we're going to explore how's your love of life with the famous Barbara Walton. Dr. Barbara Walton comes to us from Kansas City, and she's an MCC and the Chief Inspiration Officer of Know the Difference LLC, an international professional coaching company. Dr. Walton has delivered well over 10,000 hours of individual and team coaching across organizations like NASA, NOAA, Best Buy, Sprint, DST Systems, Vitamix. She's a best-selling author with Brian Tracy of Cracking the Success Code, which was published by Celebrity Press in May of 2012. Barbara holds the very prestigious Master Certified Coach credential awarded by the International Coach Federation. She served as an ICF board member from 1997 to 2006. That's a long time, 10 years. Serving as president of our global ICF board from 2004 to 2005. During that time, she created the ICF Foundation. It's a separate nonprofit entity with the objectives and purpose of education, research, and charitable purposes related to the coaching profession, and served on the ICF Foundation board from 2007 to 2010, which took her service up to 14 years. And a little known fact, but a very important fact, the International Coach Federation has members in over, I think, 120 countries, something like that, which was, by the way, more countries than are represented at the Olympics this year. And Barbara single-handedly launched the chapter program in those early days when we all served on the board of the ICF, and it was very, very, very much a working board. It was like a full-time job for all of us. And Barbara spent just untold hours on conference calls and one-on-one calls with the chapter leadership around the country and around the world, trying to get those chapters launched and have them be effective and productive and add value to our coaching members around the globe. So Barbara is a powerhouse. And please join me in welcoming Dr. Barbara Walton.
Hello there.
Hey,
so good to be with
so
you.
Oh, it's so great to be with you. So, so great. And we just look forward to you sharing your wisdom and your insights with us today. Now, Barbara, I am a little bit hokey, and I always like to know where people grew up. And I suspect that you grew up in the Kansas City area, but just tell us a little bit more about that experience.
Well, actually, I didn't grow up in Kansas City. I'm a military brat, an Air Force brat. My dad was in the Air Force for his whole career. So he did retire in the area of Kansas City, but we didn't get here until, maybe 6th or 7th grade, something like that. But before that, we were all around the Midwest. I was actually born in North Dakota.
Oh, so, North Dakota.
Yeah.
That's
kind of
fun. Yes, yes, yes. So you all settle there in the Kansas City area, though?
Yeah, when my dad retired, you know, most of the kids were grown up, and so most of us have families here in this area, and my mom's still here. And my dad, he got smart, and he went to Florida. But we're all still here in the cold area of Midwest.
Yeah, and tell us about your grandmother, because you have an extremely aged yet extremely vibrant grandmother.
Oh, yeah. All of my grandparents have, you know, lived to late years, and the grandmother that we still have to enjoy, she's 95. We just celebrated her 96th birthday in August.
Wow.
And I keep telling her she's going to make it to 100. She just looks at me like I'm a little bit silly, foolish or something. But I think she'll be around for a while.
Isn't that extraordinary? Such good DNA that you have.
Yeah.
That's great. That's so great. And you have a full house of your own. I remember when we were on the board together and we would be at the conferences, you would bring a busload of family members. Tell us about your own children and now grandchildren.
Yeah, I have 5 children of my own. Actually, 3 of them are adopted children and 2 of them are biological children. I don't know if you realize that at any point, but
I did not know that, because they're all so beautiful. They all look just like you.
Yeah, they are beautiful. Thank you for that.
They are.
So 5 children, and of course 3 of them are married. That makes 8. With the in-laws and son-in-laws, and then I have 3 grandchildren, 3 granddaughters, actually. So all girls at this point for grandchildren, and I'm really loving that part of life. That is the easy part of life.
Yeah, so much fun. I tell people I never regretted not being a parent, but I am totally, totally disappointed in not being a grandparent, so I can only imagine how much fun that is.
Somehow it's sort of a payback, or all the hard work, you know, that you invest in parenting really pays off well in grandparenting.
Isn't that great?
That's so great.
Nice. So a long line of strong people in your family and great, great DNA with that grandmother. That's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I would say that too.
Now, tell us about your background before you became a coach.
My background, well, I joined the Army, actually, when I wanted to go to college, and I was in the middle of 5 children myself. I wanted to go to college, and my dad said he wasn't going to pay my way to college because he couldn't pay for everybody to go to college, and he was Air Force. So I joined the Army thinking that was really going to show him or something like that. I don't know. He just looked at me like I was a little bit insane to join the Army. So I joined the Army, got some money for college. At that point, I thought I was going to be a physician. I really believed my whole life that I would be a pediatrician because I love kids so much. But when I was in the military, I learned that it wasn't the physical part of the humans that I really wanted to take care of. It was more the emotional and the psychological parts. So that redirected me towards psychology. I got my doctorate in psychology while I was raising my 5 kids. I can remember them drinking a bottle of champagne with me when I finished my doctorate, and they thought that was pretty cool. My doctorate's in clinical psychology. I'd actually started coaching before I finished my doctorate, though, so that was kind of interesting as well. I was kind of doing, both sides of the clinical side as well as the coaching side of psychology, and I was really interested in health psychology at that point. This was back in 1995, and I really had a hard time getting my faculty to embrace coaching. In the health psychology field, I was actually getting myself in a lot of trouble trying to bring up the whole idea of coaching within a clinical setting. And now it's like everybody's doing that, and it was a great idea. But back then, I was putting myself at risk getting through my doctoral program because they were not advocates of coaching. So it kind of kept to the organizational coaching, the executive coaching while I finished my doctorate. I still did some clinical work. Even though I was having more fun with the coaching, I still did some clinical work within a hospital setting. I worked with folks going through bariatric surgery, qualifying them for how they would navigate that experience and how they would be successful
wow.
in that.
Wow.
But I also worked with some adolescents in inner city Kansas City. I was in a government-funded psychiatric hospital in inner city
wow.
Kansas City. It just got to be really heavy work, and I was having
yeah.
so much fun with the coaching that I was really drawn to that more. And especially when the funding wasn't there to do what was needed, what was necessary with the clinical population. You could only work with them so long. You could only do certain things. It was very frustrating. So I, eventually followed my heart and just did the coaching work. That was probably about the time that I met you because I really got into the ICF at that point when I was leaving the clinical field. And I met Skip Bors. That wonderful man. I miss him. And, I was thinking as you were introducing me that Bobette Reeder was really the one who kicked off the work around the chapter development. I did pick it up for her as she moved on
to
bigger responsibilities.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, most important that. Yeah, and Bobette was the chapter guru at the very beginning,
yes.
and she had done a great job of it. I really just followed in her footsteps, and it was easy from that point on, but we did grow it quite a bit off of the good work
yes.
that she initiated.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I remember, though, that you just spent what seemed to me just a tremendous amount of time and, of course, a lot of great energy and enthusiasm and wisdom building up those individual chapters around the country and then around the globe.
Yeah.
And,
I think the Internet was becoming really popular then. It was really easy to be in touch with people around the world, and I was just so passionate about it. It was so easy to stay connected with people and get them going with their local communities, building their ICF chapters. So I was kind of a little bit nerdy around being around the Internet, and that's why I loved it
right.
so much.
Right, but that was in the very early days. I mean, when we first started coaching, there was no Internet. So that
right,
was the
right.
very earliest days. Yeah, so you were quite
Yeah, we
the
were
pioneer.
Dialing up on AOL to get connected and all of that.
right.
It's the early chapters,
Yes. And Judy Fell is going to be our guest here soon, and she was one of the pioneers in helping us all get plugged in because she came from that strong IT background.
That's right. Her newsletter
yeah.
and her. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we've not scheduled Bobette, so I'm going to make that a priority to get Bobette scheduled. So many people have, Cindy Reinhart's been on a couple of times because Cindy and I have done a pretty good job of staying connected, but we need to get Bobette as a guest on our Blog Talk Radio show.
Yeah, get her to talk about that event that she does in May. She would love to talk about that.
Yes.
And she has
yeah.
grandbabies, too, so she's all in grandbaby
yeah.
mode herself.
Right.
Grandma
right.
mode.
yeah. Now, where did you get your coach training?
I did my coach training at Coach University. Yeah, there was only CTI and Coach University when I was getting training. I think
yeah.
I've heard you talk about that before, that Thomas didn't even tell you about CTI, and you went with Coach U. But, there were only two schools in the beginning when I got started.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, so many of us, you, me, Bobette, Judy, Cindy, a lot of people on that board, initial board, had come from that Coach U community. We were already plugged in as trainers, facilitators of the coaching curriculum, and so it just was a natural extension that we would all be volunteers launching this great association. And as I recall, Thomas was the one that, put up the initial funding. I know he was the one that called me and asked me to, before we even had the name International Coach Federation, he called and said, would me and Jeff Rame get together? Jeff was in Tucson at that time and start some kind of Arizona chapter. So, a lot of good history.
There's a lot of history there that most people don't know, but those were fun days.
Yes.
Starting
yes,
up the
yes.
ICF.
Oh, my gosh, yes. It was amazing, amazing that we were able to accomplish that. And when I think about, I haven't been to a conference since Las Vegas, so a couple of years, but when I think about the number of attendees that we get at our conferences now, I know we have three global ones, so we don't have one just great big one, but we get the, you know, the number of members in ICF and the number of attendees at our conferences is just really, I think, unprecedented for a new industry and a new profession and a new organization. So we all have a lot to be proud of.
Yeah. They can't stop something when the time has come for it, right? That's kind of what it's going,
right.
What's going on.
Right. That's a really great way to put it. A really great way to put it. So let's speak more about How's Your Love of Life. Tell us what you mean by that title, and tell us how that relates to your coaching practice.
Sure. Thanks for that. So often what I spend a lot of time talking to my clients about is the energy that they're bringing to the experience, right, their love of life. And it kind of shocks them a little bit because they think I'm asking them, how's your love life? And I'm like, no, how's your love of life? And then they have to pause and go, well, wait a minute, I hadn't even really thought about that. And so it gets them thinking about how they are embracing the experience, how they're staying grateful for the experience, you know, how can they begin to be more curious about what is good in the experience when they are tempted to say what is wrong, what's not working, what they want to be different. So when I ask them and they get used to me asking them, you know, usually at very pointed times, how's your love of life? It really helps them shift their mindset to gratitude, back to gratitude and embracing the opportunity that's before them rather than defining it as a challenge or a struggle. I'm really getting into a mindset that all of it is there to grow us. All of it is there to help us wake up and become more conscious and become more responsible, really. Not just responsible in, you know, like a agreement kind of way, keeping our agreements with each other, but really in how you're going to be alive and vibrant with the experience. So that's really what I'm talking about when I say, how's your love of life?
I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. So say more about why you focus so heavily on this concept of gratitude.
Gratitude for me is the place or the mindset that we are most creative when we come from that. It's sort of like if we're coming from anything else other than gratitude, we certainly sort of create some sort of tunnel vision or a barrier for ourselves. We become our own barrier. So when we're in a mindset of gratitude, that's when we have the broadest perspective and we're able to stay curious, innovative, you know, create something more than what is predictable. I always say that gratitude helps us transcend what is predictable to create what is possible.
Mm-hmm. Love
and
that.
So, yeah. you know, in relationships, in families, you know, it's too short of an experience to do only what is predictable. We just really always want to be moving to something, well, and even life. Life is wanting to heal and get bigger. The world is always moving towards healing and expansion in my mindset. That's my belief. I believe that life is asking that of us. Our relationships are asking that of us. Our families are asking us to get bigger, you know, to step into a bigger version of ourselves. And the universe knows what's next, what's needed next to move each of us towards our fullest version of authenticity or yeah, integrity, authenticity, all of that.
Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. So how do your prospective clients respond to this belief and mindset and orientation that you offer when you first meet people?
You know, sometimes I think it does take them back a little bit. It's not something I share in the first conversation or even really early in the relationship. I wait until the relationship is really established and they've created some of the results that they are focused on creating. So we have more of a relationship when I start asking them to think about more of an existential question or a spiritual question maybe. And I wouldn't say every relationship, every coaching relationship goes there, but those are the ones that are most fun for me when it gets to that point. I think my ideal client is anybody who feels blocked by circumstances, yet who's committed to bringing their best to each and every day, someone who's unwilling to live a mediocre life, and is willing to challenge themselves every day to transcend, what they might otherwise do without the challenge, without the thoughtfulness. And it could be a team leader or a team with team leader that is up to a challenging task. It could be an individual or a couple that wants more out of their marriage. And, you know, I also work with business owners who have a big vision of service. So really, it's about anybody, and my ideal client is somebody who wants to take it to the next level, which includes an existential question. You know, how am I giving back? How is this making a difference? How am I positively changing the world? Not just how am I surviving or how am I going to make it through this day or this month or this year? It becomes a bigger question. So many clients will come not knowing they're going to get into that deep of a conversation with me, but I make sure that the relationship can handle the challenge. The relationship is up for the deep
right.
conversation.
right. That's so great. Now, not only do you have a tremendous amount of corporate coaching experience in very large Fortune 500 size organizations, but you have all of that experience with NASA, and I don't even know what NOAA is. Is that the Oceanic?
Yeah, that's NOAA. Yeah, NASA and NOAA are really closely related. Yeah, that's right. Everybody kind of gets thrown off by that. I should have thought about spelling that out for you, but it's become obvious to me that I forget that not everybody thinks about all of that environmental stuff every day like
right.
I do.
right. So
the NASA and NOAA and lots of team development going on there. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I knew that you had done tremendous team development work in those kinds of organizations. So tell us how those engineers and astronauts and scientists, how do they relate to you and your coaching perspective?
Oh, to the conversation around how's your love of life?
Yeah.
Usually we'll just talk about it around calling it happiness. How happy are you?
Perfect. Love it.
So I ask all of my clients at the beginning of the conversation to give me a number on a scale of 1 to 10 about how happy they're feeling today. And if it's a low score, then we will, try to bring something up that will move the score up before we jump into coaching. Because just like I said, if you're in a mindset of gratitude, you're going to be more creative, more innovative. So if the same way with happiness. If you're happy, the higher you score on the happy scale for yourself, the more innovative your thinking is going to be, the more you're going to be able to transcend those predictable responses or the knee-jerk reaction to whatever is showing up and looks like a challenge. So with those clients, I'm probably talking about it more with about how happy they are, even though I would say some of that. Even some of those clients do talk about how they love their job, how they're passionate about their job, and we eventually do work it into the conversation about the love of life or the love of the role or the love of the work that they do. And so it's pretty close to the conversation that I do outside of organizations as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, let me just pause for a second and remind our listeners that if they would like to engage with you, they can call in at 424-243-9638 and then enter #1, and that will alert our producer, Anna Malikian, that they would like to join the call and participate and interact with you live. So, that number is 424-243-9638, and then they can enter #1 to alert us that they're not only on the call, but they want to talk live. Because I know there are people out there that are fascinated by this and want to, learn how to do these practices for themselves, the gratitude and being able to raise your score on your happiness you know, rating, you know, within a few minutes is an extraordinary concept, and I know people would love to hear examples of the kind of things that you coach people, your clients, to do in that first few minutes of a coaching call. So I don't know if you want to say more about that, but I love it. I love the idea, and I know people get tremendous value. So can you say a little bit about that, Barbara?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, this is just like having, you know, gathering for an afternoon tea with you. So I'd love to tell you a little bit more about that. When someone comes in with a score, you know, that they're saying they're not as happy or not as energetic, not as enthused about, you know, their day or about their life, then I know that it's too soon to move them into trying to problem solve. Because it's really frustrating for me to get them to be thinking creatively from a place of low energy. So sometimes it's just a matter of getting them to move around the room, you know, get up out of their desk instead of talk to me slumped in their chair. So sometimes it's just a matter of movement, you know, and they can shift their energy by moving. Sometimes I will ask them, you know, about the pictures that they have in their office. You know, usually somebody will have a picture of their child or their spouse or their grandmother or anything that's really important to them, and you can feel the energy shift just as soon as they tune back into what they have a deep value around, whether it's family or, you know, their last vacation or whatever it is. But I will get them to a better energy. I get them to move themselves to a better energy and really acknowledge it, that they're in a better energy place as we begin the coaching conversation. So sometimes we'll pause and we'll breathe and let them get present, because they've just been running from one meeting to the next meeting and they haven't really even had lunch or thought about what they're going to bring to their coaching conversation. And simply by asking them to get present with themselves and present in the moment, their energy shifts. So it's fairly simple. It's kind of tailored to each client and how well I know each client. But, you know, usually I can tell what to do with each client. Now, when I worked with the client for a long time, they start doing the work before they come to the call, which is just so awesome. They'll tell me what they've done to shift their energy before we, you know, right when we get on the call, they'll tell me what they've done to move from a 5 to an 8 or something. And they know that I'm not going to jump into a, you know, problem-solving conversation or a coaching conversation until they are at a fairly high number, just because they're not going to come up with anything new. They're going to come up with a lot of the predictable stuff that they can do without me.
I love that. And then when you're, I know you do a lot of face-to-face team coaching and team development work. Do you also hit the pulse?
We do a lot of gratitude exercises where we'll have them go around and tell each other what they're grateful about being on the team. And or they'll acknowledge someone else in the room. So it could be anybody that's in the room. They'll say what they appreciate about that person. And that will just, you know, it'll raise the energy really quickly. So you can tell, we don't check in with each person in on a team. Not everybody gives a starting number. But we will do an exercise at the beginning to raise everybody's energy.
Love that. Well, how did you get oriented to this kind of, you know, I think many, many coaches and facilitators and trainers and speakers have a similar mindset and a similar belief system to you, but I'm just so curious about how you integrated it at the beginning of the team coaching or the beginning of an individual coaching session. I think that's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I think it comes with experience, right? It comes with experience. I don't know that I've always done that. I think it's kind of evolved over time that I would realize, well, we've worked for 30 minutes, and now the energy is shifting. What could I do to shift the energy earlier, right? And so just getting really committed to having the energy be a creative, innovative energy, a kind of a high-level thinking mindset. I really want to be a catalyst for their good thinking, and I realize that they've got to be in an open place you know, open-hearted, open-minded, before we're going to get anything accomplished, before we're going to create anything new. So I think it's evolved over time that I've gotten more committed to doing that at the beginning. And, you know, they've cooperated graciously. They've humored me, and they've benefited from the experience, and now they want it as much as I want it. They want to have the conversation from that space rather than a heavy, dark space or a heavy, oh, my gosh, we're never going to solve this kind of space.
Right, of course, right. Well, I like to brag that my clients get literally, I think, addicted to celebrating the successes and doing those acknowledgments, because I haven't been as bold as you in, you know, hitting the pause button at the beginning of the conversation and getting them to, you know, assess where they are around gratitude and happiness and move themselves up before you start the coaching conversation. I haven't done that, but I do spend a lot of time. I make every team I work with start with the acknowledgments to celebrate the successes. And then I, of course, do that a lot in my one-on-one coaching conversations too. And I find that clients will stay on, you know, at a reduced level of intensity. They've accomplished all the extraordinary things they want to accomplish, but they still want to be connected with me once a month or once a quarter until they, you know, some of them until they retire, because they just really love getting this done.
I know what you're talking about. They call it a booster shot. They need to call in for their booster shot.
Right.
Like an allergy shot or an energy. Yeah, they just come back to refresh their energy. You know, I think part of what part of the process in getting people to do this is recognizing that we all have like 70,000 thoughts each day, right? But the research is telling us that those thoughts tend to be the same thoughts every day, repetitive thoughts, the same thoughts we thought yesterday, unless we're really challenging ourselves to, you know, create from a different mindset, to elevate to a different thinking space. Right, so that Albert Einstein quote about you can't solve a problem with the same level of thinking that you use to create it, that really rolls into this about why it's so important for them to think about how they're loving life, how they're embracing the opportunities, how they're seeing it all as necessary and important and a part of the journey, a part of the path forward.
Right, it's part of the path forward. Well, I think the operative word there, you said, you know, those 70,000 thoughts that we have every day are mostly repetitive thoughts unless we are challenging ourselves. And I'd be curious to know how you find those people that are ready to challenge themselves versus the people that are just comfortable staying where they are.
You know, I think everybody wants to challenge themselves. They just don't get a safe enough space to challenge themselves in. That's my sense. Everybody wants to challenge themselves and wants to create more of what they desire. But not everybody finds the space safe enough to challenge themselves. And part of that is not everybody can get out of that low energy or that tunnel vision, or to believe that it's possible. Lots of resignation that I bump into. But even that, you have to decide, you have to recall that there's a choice involved. Resistance, resignation, reactivity, and what I like to say, responsibility is a choice. We all have that to make that choice about how we're going to live this day. And it goes back to my own work with one of my first coaches. And I made a commitment that I wasn't going to live any moment of my life. I wasn't going to give away any moment of my life to anything other than joy, which really goes along with that question now about how is your love of life? Because I want all of my moments to be lived by a mindset of joy. And I really think that we attract our clients, right? Our clients are attracted to us. So the folks who want that feeling, that are ready to have that feeling, are ready to claim that dancing heart of joy, they are attracted to me. I can have a coaching conversation with anybody, but certain clients are obviously my clients. And they know it, I know it. It just has a life of its own.
I love that. Well, so let's talk some more about that, what Thomas Leonard called irresistible attraction, and that we do what I've said for decades is everybody gets the coach they're ready to have. So I don't feel any competition or compare. I don't try to compare myself to other coaches because I just think, well, first of all, there's billions of people out there that could benefit from coaching, and everybody gets the coach they're ready for. So I'd love to hear you talk more about Thomas's concept of irresistible attraction and all of that.
I agree. I think I guess it goes right along with law of attraction, you know, all of that divine compensation that you hear rolling around. It's just a matter of maybe the vibration or the energy that we are, there's sort of a metaphor that's been sort of kind of formulating in my head that, you know, there's all kinds of thoughts running around out there in space, kind of like Wi-Fis that you can tune into, you know, like when we're traveling and we get to pick which Wi-Fi we're going to sign on to, which Wi-Fi
yes.
service. So we might tune into, you know, the Marriott Wi-Fi or Starbucks Wi-Fi, it's not really like that, but that's the example that I've been thinking about, that we're all just deciding how we're going to be tuned in to the energy that's already out there, the thoughts that are already out there, the truths that are already out there, because I don't think that I'm making up these truths. I think they're already out there. I'm just, you know, aligning with those truths, kind of the way I would sign on to a particular Wi-Fi that I find is safe. Right? So I'm in alignment with a set of truths or a set of universal principles, right? And the clients are attracted to me because they're in alignment with those principles as well, or something about those principles are intriguing to them and they want to be in alignment with it, even if they don't really fully understand it yet. But it's really just a matter of deciding which of those access points, access to divine, I think, that you're going to sign on to, that you're going to align with, knowing that there are a lot out there. I think I've heard somebody talk about it like a radio program, a radio frequency. You could sign on to K-Love or you could sign on to K-Lack, right? And it's really just a matter of which one's more important to you, which one's more authentic to you, and which one do you believe in. And many people believe in K-Lack, right? That's their favorite talk radio station.
Right.
My clients tend to believe in Love, and they're signing into K-Love, and they believe in that.
I love it. Those are great analogies of the Wi-Fi and the radio stations are excellent analogies. And it's like you said, we all get to choose, and we have to choose every day again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we choose
now,
by what we put our attention on, right? That influences
right.
the choice that we will make, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is those 70,000 thoughts.
Right. What I'd be interested to know with your clinical background, I say all the time to my clients when they're, sharing about either family members who are challenging or colleagues, you know, my really area of expertise is helping people bring out the best in other people. And so for the, 99% of the time we're able to work through those challenging work relationships and conflict, but sometimes I just say, you know, mental illness is more prevalent than we know, and I do think that there's a pretty high degree of mental illness out there in the world, and people haven't gotten treatment, don't know they should get treatment. I'd just be curious to know with your clinical background, I'm not trained in any of that, so it's just my opinion, but as a professional who's worked in both arenas, coaching successful people who want their success to come to them more strategically and, you know, have it be bigger and bigger success, and at the other end of the spectrum, people that really are so ineffective at managing these thoughts that they become obsessive or something like that, or worse.
Yes.
Could you speak to that for a minute?
Well, my sense is it's just a level of woundedness, right? Mental illness is about being wounded on a psychological level, maybe even a biological level. Some of it can't be overcome on this round through the experience, but it can be it can become a barrier, right, the mental illness. But I believe that love heals, right? So when we are in a place of love or gratitude, we actually can be part of healing others, healing ourselves, healing the woundedness, and that will bring out the best possible for each of us, right? Whether it's someone who has a mental illness, you know, they still in a environment of love, you'll get the best that they have to offer, even if it doesn't meet, you know, normal standards, or even if it leaves some to be desired, it's still the best that they have to offer. And the environment is what brings out the best in all of us, regardless of our woundedness. But when we are in an environment that actually can help us heal, then we may surprise ourselves with what we're capable of or what is possible. We'll do that transcending, predictable kind of thing through our commitment to gratitude and curiosity. It's not always the case for a true mental illness, but even in mental illness, those folks fare better and become part of the social structure more easily when they're when they have an environment that is, you know, accepting and loving of whatever they have to deal with.
Right. Now,
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did beautifully. And so what I would say your primary focus is helping people reduce their judgments, but you haven't really used that word judgments. I don't know if you have a bias against, you know, focusing on labeling or.
No, I don't have a bias against it at all. Occasionally that word will come up for me in conversations. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't come up today as well. But I try to focus on the positive, right, rather than the anything that would cause a reaction. So sometimes, you know, even the word judgment makes someone be judgmental. feel judged.
Right.
So probably it's just a coping strategy or a navigation strategy of my own that it's just a matter of aligning with whatever is true for you at this moment, knowing that it could change. Your judgment, your belief could change if you could broaden your perspective, if you could see it from a different angle. I do use the word a lot, and I'm surprised it hasn't shown up today.
But I do, I mean, I just love the, you know, the gratitude, the happiness, the innovation and the curiosity. Those are key words, but it is all about letting go of our judgments, judging ourselves, judging the situation, judging other people. Coaching call this morning with a client.
That's right, the constricted places. That's where the judgment causes the tunnel vision or the constrictedness. That's where we lose our creativity and our innovativeness. You get stuck. So what about your conversation this morning?
Well, it was with a really dynamic young CEO, founder of a company, and I said, you know, the judgments you have are mostly around, you know, everybody else is an idiot. But we were talking about one of his people, and I said, but, you know, Bob that you're talking about, the conversations in his head are most likely that he's an idiot. And I know that's not something you can relate to because you're always thinking everybody else is an idiot. But I just think it's, you know, we do have those conversations, 70,000 of them in our head every day. And they're, like you said, they're repetitive, they're negative, they're limiting. And I think we can all be divided into those two camps, you know, either I think I'm an idiot or I think everybody else is an idiot. But, you know, that's kind of the theme of those conversations from my perspective. And I love what you said, that when you let yourself have those judgments, it creates that tunnel vision and that constrictedness, and you can't move forward powerfully or energetically or productively.
Yeah, because if you think somebody's an idiot, you're not going to spend a lot of time creating a great relationship with them or bringing out the best in them, right? You're not going to have a lot of energy for that.
That's right. Now,
that does come up a lot, and what I tell my clients is you don't get through the doors of this organization by being an idiot. Mm-hmm. It's near impossible.
I love it. I love it.
So, I mean, there's a baseline. They have to be pretty smart to get hired here.
Right.
So, yeah, they might be showing up like that. They might, you know, the persona might look like that. What's behind that? And how do we really cultivate the brilliance behind that surface or behind that bias that we've created to them? And, you know, oftentimes it is just somebody's way of being reminds us of somebody that we didn't like in grade school, or they
right.
talk the way that our, you know, our cousin talked to us who was from Tallahassee, or, you know, the strangest things create biases. And that's why
right.
that challenge about the thoughts, you know, which thoughts are you going to let go of? They didn't serve you yesterday and they're still not going to serve you today. Which ones are you willing to let go of? Because
you've
got to make room for some new thoughts.
Right. Because if there's no space for the new thoughts, then you're not going to raise it up on the happiness scale, and you're not going to be able to attract what you want, the quality of life and the quality of relationships and the quality of people.
Right.
Well, I want to spend a few minutes at the end talking more about the International Coach Federation, since that's the purpose of our show, to promote the profession, and since you've been such a strong proponent and a successful proponent of that now for almost two decades. But tell me first, Barbara, what is your ideal client? As our listeners are listening to this, and if they're coaches or business people, and they, I'd just be curious to know, is there a theme of who you
mm-hmm.
tend to attract?
Yeah, well, so my business is called Know the Difference, right? So that's like know the difference between living and living well. So many times my clients will come to me fairly successful, but they want to know the difference, you know, living well, living at the next level. They're ready for a challenge. So oftentimes they are in organizations trying to lead a team and bumping into their own biases about the people that they're being asked to lead, or their own biases about their own leadership. So they're not being as successful as they expected themselves to be. So that's a very large component of my client base. The next group are, and this comes from just my passion around family and passion around marriages, that I end up attracting a lot of clients who want to either turn around a relationship that's gotten off the tracks, or they want to create a relationship that won't get off the tracks. So that's another set, a client set that I end up working with as well.
I love that. So you're doing across the whole spectrum. You're doing relationships and personal coaching with couples who want to, you know, get their, you know, take it to the next level in their relationship. And then you're doing these very sophisticated, very professional, very structured, you know, corporate environments like the Fortune 500
yeah.
or these NASA and NOAA.
Yep. The interesting thing is that the common theme between all of that is the relationships, right? We don't accomplish
right.
anything on our own.
So, right.
A team leader can't accomplish anything by themselves. They have to have their team, right? They can't be lone rangers, right? And in a marriage relationship, you can't be a lone ranger there either. You have to prioritize the well-being of the team, well-being of the family. That has to become your focus. So there is a very common thread that goes through all of my clients. It's around the relationships, around being able to honor themselves and their relationships with others. So not losing themselves in the relationships, not holding themselves back in those relationships, but being able to be fully authentic themselves as well as contributing to the authenticity or the capacities, you know, whatever is possible for their relationships with others, whether it's a team or a family.
Love that, yes. We cannot be successful in isolation, I say. We cannot be successful, you know, withdrawing and withholding ourselves. We can only be successful in for the long term, I believe, in because of the partnerships and relationships we have and the teams that we help build and sustain. So I love that. Well, so tell us more about why you were motivated in the first place to engage so so fully and so passionately around building this profession and building the International Coach Federation?
I believe that coaching is the most powerful force for positive change on the earth. And it doesn't matter to me who's doing it or how qualified or how trained they are to do it. Coaching is the brilliance, right? And the more people that we can do that can do the coaching and can do the, you know what it is and know how to further the coaching conversation, the better. And I think that's what the ITF does. It educates about coaching. It, you know, puts some standards out there for what it is and what it, when it's professional, when it is a professional service, what it looks like. I think we should have coaching skills as part of our parenting, as part of our, you know, every relationship, every opportunity that we engage in life. We should know how to coach ourselves, coach each other, and receive coaching from others, be coached. That's something that not all of us do very well, let ourselves be coached by others. We tend to go
right
back to that Lone Ranger mode. So I've gotten involved with the ICF because of how strongly I believe the power of coaching can create positive change. And it's just been a great group of people, easy to be involved with them, and easy to, you know, have friends in that community. When you have friends
right
there, you're going to keep coming back, right?
Right. The relationships and the connections.
Yes.
Yeah. What? Give us your perspective on the certification that ICF offers, the ACC, the PCC, the MCC. I know you have been at MCC for well over a decade. That's the highest level of credential. And at one time, there were less than 700 of us that had that designation. Tell us about your thoughts on why that those credentials are important.
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge the folks who have done a level of work to become experts in the professional service. It's a way for them to be recognized as having invested in themselves and the skill set that they are offering to clients that they're hoping to create a business around. So I believe credentialing is very important for us as professionals. But I also think that it helps the general public know the level of experience, the level of confidence that they can have, the level of commitment that the professional that they're working with has towards the offer, the service that they are offering to the customer, the client. So I believe it's important from both aspects, the client as well as the coaches. The credentialing to me is important if we want to call ourselves a profession, if we want to continue to build the skill set of coaching and have it be recognized as separate and distinct from other skill sets, whether it's mentoring or consulting or therapy even. We have to be able to establish those levels of experience, levels of accomplishment.
Yes, beautifully stated. I haven't been able to articulate it that beautifully, but what I always say is that, like for instance, here in Phoenix, we have about 200 members of our Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation, and we're quite proud of that. But yet there's about 2,000 people in Phoenix calling themselves coaches, and we have to have a way to distinguish ourselves from those people that, you know, are not trained and not credentialed and not experienced and don't have the expertise, but yet, because there's no barrier to entry, they get to call themselves a coach just like we do.
Yeah, and you know what I say, if you're getting results, keep going with the coach that you have. But if you're not getting results, then one of the things to ask yourself is does the coach have training, coach-specific training? So if you are getting results, that probably speaks for itself. You probably you wouldn't need to be disappointed if you are getting the results that you want in the relationship, even if it isn't a credentialed coach. If you're not getting results and you wonder why that's the case, it could be because the individual hasn't really made the distinction between other skill sets, whether they're trying to mentor someone or whether they're being a consultant, or you know, maybe mixing up all of that. And I do all of those things at different times in my relationships, but I'm very clear about what the coaching is and how that skill set really is what serves the client to step into their own truth, rather than, you know, action what I tell them is the truth.
Yes, love that language. Now, tell us more about why you were passionate about starting the foundation at the International Coach Federation.
Well, you know, that was sort of initially I wanted to find a way to get people trained as coaches that might not otherwise be able to afford coach training. That was my motivation in the very beginning. And I was thinking about rural areas, other countries, you know, finding a way to bring coaching and coach training to folks who might not otherwise be able to get it. But it has evolved in some very nice ways, including, you know, pairing up nonprofits with coaches who are willing to volunteer their time. So it's become even bigger than I imagined it in the very beginning. I just knew I had a real interest.
I had a real interest
in having that foundation there to facilitate that kind of stuff, including the research. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it does not surprise me at all because you bring such a tremendous amount of capacity and energy. So I'm not a bit surprised that it got the foundation has been able to. Yeah. No. Of course. Well, I have a few announcements before we wrap up our show, but let me make my announcements, and then if you have any closing comments for our listeners, we'll circle back, Barbara, and you can share those if you'd like. So for our listeners, you can see our list of future shows at blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix, and again, our Facebook page, where you can get more information about how to get your CCEU credits for listening to these shows, can be found on our website. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix, it'll lead you to both the Facebook page and the ICF Phoenix chapter website, which will give you the information that you need to have to get those CCEUs. We all need those, especially those of us who are credentialed coaches. So next month, on March 14th at 2 o'clock Phoenix time, we're going to have Judy Feld, MCC, as our guest. Judy is also a former president of the International Coach Federation and served on the board in the late 90s with Barbara and I, and is an extraordinary leader and was one of the first people to get into group coaching in a big way early on, like in 1995, 96. So I look forward to hearing Judy's whole story there. And then on Friday, April the 11th, we'll have another Arizona leader, Diane Brennan, MBA, MCC, FAC, MPE. She does quite a bit of work in healthcare, and that's a healthcare credential. And Diane is also a more recent president of the ICF, and we'll have her for a full hour picking her brain and getting her to share her wisdom. Again, I wanted to thank our producer. We would not be here today without Anna Malikian, PhD, BCC, ACC, an elite-level Book Yourself Solid coach. And thank you so much, Barbara, for your generosity and sharing your wisdom and experiences with us today. It's just been extraordinary. Would you like to say anything at all to our listeners as a way to wrap up?
Thank you. Yes, I'd just like to say that what I know is when you love life, life will love you back.
Love that. And a perfect ending on Valentine's Day. If you love your life will love you back. And we all want more love and want to be able to celebrate Valentine's Day in a big way. So that's so beautifully stated. Thank you, Barbara. It's been an absolute joy and a delight to have this time with you today. And I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Catherine.
For your generosity.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I hope you have a wonderful evening. Take care.
Thanks. And happy Valentine's Day.
Absolutely, yes.
Thanks.